Okay, good evening. This week's Parsha is Parsha Shoftim. And in the second Aliyah of Parsha Shoftim, we have one brief discussion that the Torah has. Savei Eloret Asher Hashem Alekecha Naisen Loch V'Yirishtav Yoshavta Bo. You will come to the land that Hashem is giving you, and you will inherit it and settle in it, and you will say, let me place upon myself a melech, a king, like all the nations that surround me. So the Torah goes and gives instructions about how that melech, how that king should be appointed, should be Asher Yivchar Hashem Elokecha Bo. King who was chosen by God from the midst of the Jewish people. Not someone from the outside. And then some specific instructions. He shouldn't amass large amounts of horses, because then he will feel compelled to bring the people back to Egypt, which is where one would find such things. He shouldn't have a lot of wives, that his heart shouldn't stray from the work that he has as the king. He shouldn't have Kesef Izov Ma'id, he shouldn't amass huge amounts of fortune, of silver and gold. And the opposite, after saying the things which he should avoid, the Torah says what he should engage in. V'hayoki shivto akiseim ha-machto, as he sits on his throne, v'chosav lo'yas mishna ha-Torah azois al-sefer, milifnei ha-kohanim halvim, he should write down the Torah, the Mishnah Torah, which Chazal understand here that he writes a second Sefer Torah. Every Jew has to write a Sefer Torah, but he writes for himself a second one, and it shall be with him. He should study it all of the days of his life. He should read in it all of the days of his life. He should learn to fear Hashem, to observe all of the Torah, so that his heart should not be raised up, me'achav, from amongst his brother. So he shouldn't deviate from the mitzvah to the right or to the left. This parsha of the melech, this idea of the king, and the specific instructions about how a king is appointed, and what a king is to focus on, what a king is to be engaged in, is obviously an important parsha, and it's also a very ambiguous one in the world of the Torah. The Ramban, in fact, understands, and this is an approach of the Ramban which he uses at several points in the Torah, the Ramban understands that the Torah deliberately harps on the ambiguity in this parsha, because it says, when you will come to the land, and you will say, let us have a king, like all the nations that surround us, then you should put upon yourselves a king. The Pasuk doesn't say, when you come to the land, appoint for yourselves a king. It doesn't come right out and say, this is what you should do. And on the other hand, of course, it doesn't put prohibitions or limitations. It says, you'll come to the land and you'll ask for it, then this is what you should do. Some understand this, that it's reshus, it's an option. The Ramban, who is more inclined to understand that it's a mitzvah, still speaks about the Torah addressing it in this sort of neutral, passive way of saying it. You'll come to the land and you'll ask for it, so you'll do it. That the Torah is really anticipating the way it would turn out for the Jewish people. Because when the Jewish people came to the land, they didn't immediately have a melech. Many years passed before they would have a king. But then Shmuel, who was the last in a succession of prophetic-type leaders of the Jewish people, Shmuel was dying, and the Pasuk says they observed that the sons of Shmuel were not quite Shmuel. One of Lehochu Bedrachav, they didn't follow in the same way as Shmuel had, and so they came and they said, we would like to have a king like the nations that surround us. And the language which the verse uses here, that was the language which they used there. And so the Ramban says that the verse is almost anticipating that this is going to be the way it will turn out. That the Bnei Yisrael will ask it this way, and they will ask it, Kechol HaGoyim Asher Svivo Soy. When they asked for a king, so not only was Shmuel upset, which he took it to some degree as a personal rejection, but Hashem then said to Shmuel, it's not a personal rejection of you. In fact, it's more of a rejection of me. It's not you that they've disdained, it's I that they have disdained. and they're asking for a king, and in some way that's a rejection, Hashem saw it, a rejection of Malchus Shamayim, a rejection of the divine kingdom, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Hashem being the king himself. And what I would like to do with you tonight is talk a little bit about this dynamic, this relationship in this mitzvah that we have here in this parsha, between the appointment of a human king and the presence of the Melech Malchei Amlochim, of the king as being the Rabbono Shel Olam, of God being the ultimate king of the people, and how the Torah meant for us to juggle these two sides. How this mitzvah is supposed to take the form in how we balance these two considerations of Malchus Shamayim and of Basar Vadam, of the kingdom of heaven and that of people. In the little bit that we read of this parsha, we already see how focused the Torah is on maintaining this. The Torah speaks about the king not building up anything that would make him that kind of powerful, indulgent leader that would be perhaps typical of the Melech. But instead, the king should reflect humility, Yirah Shamayim, fear of heaven. I mean, these ideas, which are mitzvahs which apply in a sense to everybody, are centered here on the Melech, on the king, because it is so important for him to reflect this and to carry with him the Torah in everything that he does, and that it shouldn't look any different. The Gemara says, on a pasuk, Rashi quotes it, it says he should carry with him so he should not deviate from the mitzvah Yamin Usmael, to the right or to the left. Say Chazal, that even mitzvah Kalos Shel Navi, even a minor, quote-unquote, instruction of a Navi, of a prophet, he must maintain in order to remain the king. And the illustration of it was that when Shaul became the king, he quickly lost it. He quickly was told that he was losing his right to the kingdom. Why? Well, Shmuel HaNavi had said to him, I want you to go there and wait for me and then offer the offering when I come. And Shaul was getting impatient. The people in turn maybe were getting a little impatient. And he went ahead and he didn't wait for Shmuel. And it was a small issue. It was a little detail. It was a matter of scheduling. But he wouldn't wait. He didn't wait. And because of that, that was the beginning of the end for Shaul HaMelech. Because, as the king, it's so important that he always maintain that there's somebody above him, that the Ribbono Shel Olam is above him. And this is a huge challenge for the Melech. It's a huge challenge for anyone, of course, in a position of leadership or of authority. But I want to learn with you a little bit more about this, how it relates to us in when we look at it, and being that, generally speaking, I don't know, where the Jewish people are called always Kol Yisrael B'nei Melachim Hein. The Jewish people are all considered like the children of kings, we're all considered like princes and princesses. But we're also, it's oftentimes we feel like regular people. And in terms of this relationship to the Melech, to the king, we're going to talk about it a little bit, coming from where we are and looking up. I want to specifically frame it. This is the first time that we're getting together in Chodesh Elul, in the month of Elul, in anticipation, a month where we already are preparing for Rosh Hashanah. And this morning, Rosh Chodesh Elul, for the first time, the second day of Rosh Chodesh Elul, we sounded the shofar. And the shofar, it's well known that there are many aspects and many reasons for the shofar, but one of the aspects is b'chatzaitzos b'kol shofar hariu lifnei hamelach. Hariu lifnei hamelach Hashem, the pasuk says. With the trumpets and the sounds of the shofar, you make the sounds, let the blasts before the king Hashem. And of course, we know that trumpets and fanfare and things like that is something which was done generally lifnei melachim, before kings. That's the way, the nature of it, a fanfare. And one of the ideas in the notions of the mitzvah of Tkiyas Shofar is because on Rosh Hashanah we announce the coming of the king. Hashem comes to judge the world. The king is a royal function. Melech b'mishpot yam eretz. And we herald the arrival of Hashem Yisbarach by the shofar. So amongst all the other ideas, that's one of them. And the announcement of Hashem as the king on Rosh Hashanah is, as we know, a very big part of Avodas Rosh Hashanah. Imru lefanai malchios kidei shetamlichuni aleichem. On Rosh Hashanah, we have several themes that we integrate into our tefillah. And the most basic one, the one which is there in every Amida, in every standing prayer of Rosh Hashanah, is the theme of Malchus, of Hashem's being the King of the world. Meloch al kol ha'olam kulo b'chvodecha v'inaseh al kol aretz b'karecha. We say, Hashem, rule over all of the world with your glory, and be uplifted over all of the land with your in your honor, b'karecha, in your precious honor. It's always repeated. That's the bracha of the sanctity of the day of Rosh Hashanah. That's the text that we use. The term melech, we all know what's the big substitution that we have to make from Rosh Hashanah through Yom Kippur. We have to switch from Hakel HaKadosh to HaMelech HaKadosh. When the davening begins in earnest on Rosh Hashanah morning, Yom Kippur morning as well, and where does it start? It starts, you know, right before Yishtabach. So normally we start Shochein Av, we start Hakel Tzatz, on Rosh Hashanah we start with one word, HaMelech, the King. The Melech. It's the time, Rosh Hashanah is the time of the day of declaring HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hashem. So here, let's learn about that. And let's learn about that in comparison, in, you know, shared a contrast with this idea of the Melech, as it's described here in the Parsha. The Melech, it's supposed to be appointed, the human king that's supposed to be appointed over us. There's a well-known passage in the Gemara. I have the Gemara in front of me, but there's a well-known passage in the Gemara where the Talmidim, the students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, were around him as he was on his deathbed, as he was preparing to leave the world. And they asked him for a bracha. It's a Gemara in Brachas, Daf Chav Ches. They asked him for a bracha, for a blessing. And the bracha which he said to them was that Yemayra Shamayim Aleichem Kemayra Basar Vadam. My blessing for you is that the fear of heaven should be upon you like the fear of a human being, of flesh and blood. So the Talmidim said, that's it? We should have fear of God like we have fear of people? And he said to them, Halavai, I wish we would have fear of God like we have the fear of people. Because as you know, right, when we sometimes might do something that we're not exactly proud of, what do? We look here, we look there, nobody's looking, and we might go ahead and do it. But do we look there? Right? So we look around, we make sure nobody else will see us, but we're not as worried about the Rabban Shalom. So he said, you know, if a person would be just as aware of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Hashem, as we are of Basar Vadam, as we are of human beings, it would be a big step. It would be something great. That was his bracha. When we look on Rosh Hashanah, to go to the opposite extreme, we look at Rosh Hashanah, Imru lefanei malchios kedei shetamlichuni aleichem. It's, in fact, absorbing, trying to bring into our consciousness, our awareness, that the real thing, that what we all completely have to answer to, is purely, purely to the Ribbono Shel Olam, to God Himself. To try to create within ourselves that ultimate awareness. There's a beautiful passage in the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, beautiful medrash. In Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, it's in Perek Yud, of the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, and I believe this passage really frames Rosh Hashanah, the way a Jew observes Rosh Hashanah. What's the passage? The passage is describing creation, the ending moments of creation, the sixth day of creation, when Hashem creates Adam HaRishon. And Adam HaRishon, Hashem formed him, and he blew into him the neshama. Adam HaRishon stood up, the Medrash says, and he was just a magnificent, magnificent being. The way Chazal described, the way the verse, in a certain sense, seems to describe Adam HaRishon as he was at the moment of creation, before he sinned, before he compromised his essence and became, you know, shrunk down to mortality. But Adam HaRishon, the immortal, Adam HaRishon, the Tzelem Elokim, the divine image. And when Adam HaRishon came on the scene, the other creatures that were there in the world, they saw Adam HaRishon as Hashem. They saw him as God. And they were ready, they were coming to bow down to him and to offer thanks and to offer acknowledgments to him. And when Adam HaRishon saw this, he turned to them and he said, "No, no, no, it's not me. Let's you and I, all of us together, turn and declare as the Melech, and we should give oaths, we should give strength, L'misha b'ra'anu, to the one who created us. The one who created us." And so he went and he turned and he got all of the Bria, all of creation, to acknowledge Hashem. I think that that's the original Rosh Hashanah. First of all, when did that happen? It happened on Rosh Hashanah. And Chazal tell us, at least it's a dispute in the Gemara in terms of the chronology, but when we daven on Rosh Hashanah, we say, this day is the beginning of your creation, remembering the very first day. According to our tradition, Hashem started creating the world on the 25th of Elul and completed the creation of man on the sixth day, which was Rosh Hashanah. So Rosh Hashanah, the first Rosh Hashanah, man came on the scene and he told everyone, let's declare Hashem and acknowledge Hashem as our king. That's what we do on Rosh Hashanah. But he didn't just say, let's declare Hashem as our king. He was looking at a society that was ready to declare man as king. He was looking at a society that had mora basar vadam, the fear of a human being. It was him. Adam. Everybody looked at him. Everybody thought that he was the one who was accorded, who should be accorded respect. Now, I understand that the way the Medrash tells the story, it sounds like a once in a lifetime of the universe event that that would happen. Because after all, that was only because Adam HaRishon was so magnificent before sin. But that's not the kind of thing that happens to us on our Rosh Hashanah. But I don't think that that's true. I think that while the Medrash, yes, presents it as it originally was, and in the dramatic form that it originally was, but the fact of the matter is that that challenge exists even with us as mere mortals, even when we don't have the magnificence of the divine image the way Adam HaRishon had it, because the fear of human beings and seeing a human being as our king, as the one to whom we have to respond, is in fact a constant issue and a constant presence for us. And when we go into Rosh Hashanah, coming from the rest of life, coming from the rest of the year, we do have to turn around and say, well, one second, I'm spending this time, I go through the year, and I have myself as the king. I have other creatures, quote unquote, that want to treat me as the king, want to acknowledge me, and I throw around that influence, I throw around that power. Maybe it's because I'm a king, maybe it's because I'm a leader, maybe it's because I'm a boss, maybe it's because I'm a parent, maybe it's because whatever it is, a member of society. But what I need to do for myself and for everything and everybody around me is say, no, 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 no. Forget about me. Don't try to impress me. but rather we need to come together to acknowledge the Rabbeinu Shalom is above us. We have to come together to do it only because of Him. We have to be transparent. We have to be non-existent in a sense as a force in that way. But instead, we need to come and be able to direct everybody's eyes towards what really is counting, towards the Rabbeinu Shalom Himself. You know, in the Gemara, it speaks in the Gemara also, much later in Maseches Brachos, also Gemara Brachos, the Gemara speaks about Brachos, which one would make upon seeing unusually great people. The Gemara has a bracha which you make on a chacham, on a very wise person. And the Gemara has a bracha which you make on a melech, on a king. And the Gemara in both cases makes a distinction. The distinction is between a Jewish and a non-Jewish, chacham or king. And the bracha is different when it comes to the non-Jewish chacham. It says Shenosan, Hashem gave of His wisdom to human being. When it comes to, or of His power, Nikvayda, His honor, rather, excuse me. When it comes to the Jewish chacham, or the Jewish king, it says Shechalak, that He shared, that He gave a portion of. What's the difference between Shenosan and Shechalak? Now, when you give something, Nosan Matana, you give it. So you give it, and it's gone. And you don't have a hand on it anymore. You're not partners in it. I gave it. It's yours. Bye-bye. Shechalak is that we're sharing it. That you have it, but I have it at the same time. And we're holding on to it together. And the wisdom, whether it's the wisdom of a chacham Yisrael, of a sage of the Jewish people, or whether it's the honor and the power of a melech of the Jewish people, it only is what it is if there's a sense that He's holding onto it together with the Rabbi Shalom, with Hashem. That's what's supposed to distinguish Chachmas Yisrael. That's what's supposed to distinguish Kvod Yisrael, whether the wisdom or the honor of the Jewish people. It's always supposed to be revolving around that. The sense that it's not the person who has it by himself as some kind of gift that Hashem gave him, even if you acknowledge that Hashem gave it to him, but now it's his. It's never his alone. The Chacham never walks away with the wisdom of the Torah. I remember coming from the calendar takes us from Tisha B'Av to Elul to Rosh Hashanah. And when it comes to Tisha B'Av, we remember the famous statement in the Gemara where it says, so why was the land destroyed? Allah's vomis tairasi, because they left my Torah. Says the Gemara, one second, it wasn't that they really left the Torah. They didn't. They were involved with the Torah. But the thing was, they didn't make a bracha, right, on the Talmud Torah. They didn't make a bracha to Hashem when they weren't the Torah. There are different ideas and understandings. Okay, so what exactly is missing? They're learning Torah, so they didn't make Berachas HaTorah. What's the big deal? But part of the deal is the sense of it's Hashem's Torah. Torah is a very commanding power. It's a very incredible item, something with great wisdom. The Chacham could, so to speak, make it his. He's wise. But the true expression of the Chacham is that he feels that he's holding on with Hashem to the wisdom. Chalak mechachmasai. And the true melech, the true king, is not the king who's excited in his power, so that he builds up his stables and his household and his wealth. But it's the king who's walking around reading his marching orders, carrying, cradling the Torah of his marching orders wherever he goes. Won't deviate an iota from the instructions which he gets from Hashem, even the real time updated instructions from the Navi, from the Prophet, who's there to guide him. Because there's never such a thing as distracting from the recognition of, I'm doing this because of Hashem. Kedei shetamlichuni aleichem. Some of you who have been with us for a while have certainly heard this from me before. There's a beautiful drasha. There's a sefer called the Drasha Saran. Ran was Rishonim, and we have a book of a couple of dozen Ran's drashas, his sermons. They're long essays. Not a running commentary on the Chumash by any means, just essays. They're very significant essays. This is an older edition now. They have published an edition which is about 3 or 4 times as fast, with footnotes and commentaries and all kinds of things. Beautiful sefer. And the Ran has a drasha, classic drasha, on this week's parsha, on Shaftim Shaitrin. And he teaches a very important lesson in what we're talking about. The Ran is troubled, of course, by what we mentioned at the outset, and something which troubles all the commentaries, which is that here the Torah tells us a mitzvah, that when you come to the land, you can ask for a king, and the say you should appoint a king. And then when the Jewish people came to the land, and they asked for a king, so Hashem got all upset and said, you're rejecting me. What's going on? If there's a parsha in the Torah called appointing a king, then go ahead. You know, that's exactly what you're supposed to do. Why would Shmuel get upset? Why would Hashem get upset? And the Ran says something extremely important. Extremely important. Ramban speaks about, he speaks about something called, we would call it an American government, the separation of powers. The notion of separation of powers, right, in American governance is that you have, the American government has 3 branches, right? You need to, I'm a Canadian, I'm not supposed to know this. Okay, but it has 3 branches. What it has the administration, right, the executive branch, it has the legislature, the Congress, and it has the judiciary. Very good, okay. I did have to learn this from my citizenship test. The judiciary, the courts. Those are the 3 branches of American government. And the Ran says that there's a separation of powers which exists in Jewish life as well. And the separation of powers is between the Sanhedrin and the Melech. The Shoftim that we read about in the beginning of our parsha, and the Melech and the king that we read about here in the second section. He says that the Shoftim have a very specific role. The Shoftim, you know, we would say are sort of like a mixture between the judiciary and the legislature. The judiciary, the legislature makes the laws, the judiciary applies the laws. The Sanhedrin, you know, they don't make the laws generally. They're because they're not the law that we work with is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem's law. Hashem is the ultimate legislature. So they have a job of applying it, and then there is some legislative roles which they have of creating laws, takanos, things to support it, to reinforce the Torah, to protect it from, you know, being undermined by our own failures of behavior, not drawing proper lines. He says, but that's ultimately, that's the goal of the Sanhedrin. They sit before Hashem in the Beis HaMikdash. Their goal is to bring the pure Torah of Hashem to the world. And that's the perception of law, the way we have it. The law that they bring is not even like the legislature of Congress. The law of the Congress is, we look at society and they say, we need to do this in order to allow society to be able to run, to be able to work properly. One of the, just as a mushal, as an example, one of the great core principles that's used in a Western society like America in order to have the system of law is that we don't forbid somebody from doing something that doesn't harm anybody else. What you do that doesn't harm anybody else is your business. That's the ultimate, right? I don't remember anymore who was the Hobbes. There was one early philosopher who formulated the principle, and it's a cornerstone of how the system works. And the core principle of it is, look, a society doesn't have to interfere in anybody else's business as long as the person's not trying to undermine the society. Everybody can live and let live. The Torah, the law of the Torah, which is brought down by the Sanhedrin, is not to make society function. The law of the Torah, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu examines, is to bring Hashem's truth down. There is, says the Ran, a separate part of government, a separate power that exists in the Jewish people that will make society function. And that's called the Melech, that's called the King. The king's job is political, to make the polity, to make the society of the Jewish people work. But the job of the Sanhedrin, yes, it's not just separated to be legislature, it's to bring Hashem's truth and his word down to the world. And so says the Ran, we have these two things. And you know, he says sometimes the laws of the Torah won't even work to make society work. Sometimes you're going to have a corrective. Right? The classic example is to have some fellow will go onto the football field during halftime, right? And in front of 70,000 people, of which 45 are not drunk, and millions of people watching on television, he will kill somebody in front of all these people. So you bring him before the Sanhedrin, and you won't be able to give him the death penalty. Everybody knows that he did it. And he may even do it the next Sunday, again and again. However, why? Because there's a process. In order to give somebody a death penalty, you have to warn him before he does the action. Right? It has to be done exactly right. If you have some fellow who's going to be, wants to be the next exciting serial killer or something like that, and he goes and kills a person here and leaves a yellow rose with a note, you know, and then he does somebody else and then does it 15 times, and then one day he walks into a police station and says, I'm the one who did all of those things, and I am the yellow rose killer. What will they be able to do with him? Self-incrimination, you know. The punishments of the Sanhedrin don't go. So they're going to let him walk. They'll let him go. He says, I'm not going to do it again. You can't kill me. You have it only based on my admission. So there the Melech, the king, would step in. Even when there was no king, the Gemara says the Sanhedrin would sometimes step in and say, okay, we're not saying this is what the Torah says, but we are saying this is what has to be done. And part of our job is going to be to make sure that this is done. And they will punish him. And they may even kill him. That's what the Gemara says. Sometimes they will impose punishments not based on the strict letter of the law, but says the Ran, that's a melech function. The failure of the Jewish people, concludes the Ran, when the Jewish people asked for a king, was because, what did we say? We said the Shmuel. After the Torah describes how Shmuel used to go and he functioned as the shofet, as the judge, he was the prophet. He was one who had the word of Hashem clearest. He would go and travel from place to place in the Jewish people, and people would want to know what Hashem has to say. They had a dispute. What is Hashem's judgment on this? And he would give it to them. And then they said, you know, Shmuel, we want a king who will judge us. L'shofteinu. Who will judge us like all the nations have. Said the Ran, how do all the nations have a king who judges them? they came from judgment, not judgment, to give them the truth, to give them Hashem's word. When the king judges them, what's he doing? He's trying to make sure that society stays ordered and healthy. And that's his only concern. Says the Ram, when they said that, it showed you that they weren't at all looking for or recognizing Hashem as the ultimate source for what they do. If they said, we want a king who's going to judge us, like every society has a king that judges them, then they just wanted to make society work. But they didn't want to recognize Hashem in what they were doing. And that was absolutely the rejection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was instead just trying to get along. That, says the Ram, is the huge failure of the Kol Yisrael, the huge failure of the Jewish people at that juncture. Now, in context of what we're learning about, in context of what we're talking about here today, understand, I feel here that this is the idea that he's stepping into exactly. The king is high risk for this, because the king is Mayra Basar Vadam, the fear of a human being, celebrated. In our parsha, what does it say? Tsayim Tasim Olecha Melech. Place, you shall place upon you a king. The Gemara Darshan, the Gemara interprets from the double expression of the Pasuk. Shetehei E Masai Olecha. You have to treat him with fear, with reverence. You can't sit in the king's chair. You can't use something which the king used once, a tool, a horse, whatever it is. You know, you can't make an auction at Sotheby's and sell it for a lot of money so somebody else can use it. Nobody else can use it. It's not respectful. If the king uses it, nobody else can. You're treating the king with reverence. It's an institution called Mayra Basar Vadam, the fear of a human being. Why? Shouldn't, in light of what we've been talking about, shouldn't we reject that whole thing? But as the Ram teaches us, the truth is there is such a thing that society has to function to. Even in the Jewish people, there's an institution called society. And that's represented by the king. Ol Malchus. The Maral explains, discussed with this you. With this with you several months ago, Oil Malchus, one of the three sources of influence, of authority in our lives, one of them is Oil Malchus, the yoke of kings, which the Ram interprets broadly as anything that we do because of other people. Because of what other people expect of us. Because of the authority of other people over us. And that exists, it's part of the world. But it looms very large. And in its largest incarnation, which we have in the Jewish people, which is the Melech, Hashem told the Melech, oh, be careful. Don't create any more of it around you than you have to. Be humble, be God-fearing, and carry around with you the Torah of Hashem. So that people understand that when you're asking of them something, what you're really asking of them is that they should do what Hashem wants. But if we would be driven first by Mayra Shamayim, by the fear of heaven, that would be the first recognition. Perhaps that would be the situation where the Melech is altogether not needed. I think that this idea of El Malchus, of the yoke of kings, of the idea of respect, whether it is of society, of government, of other people, whether in its formal expressions or whether in just the informal expressions of, again, what society sort of expects of us and our need to be able to do things for that. As it comes across in that medrash of Rosh Hashanah of Adam Arishon saying, no, don't do this because of me, don't bow down to me, but instead do it because of the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. I think it's a huge challenge for us, and it's a central piece of our avoda, of our work for Rosh Hashanah and our work for life in general. We live in a society which as a whole is extremely self-conscious of the perceptions of others, image conscious, extremely so. It's true in the general society, and it's true very strongly in certain ways even more so in the Jewish community. Simply, we just were so intertwined with other people. We have such close, relationships. Our lives overlap. We don't, it's just tremendous strength of the, of a community with all of its interconnectedness with schools and shuls and everything else. It's a beautiful thing, but it also means that we're really a part of something. We can't just disappear into our, house which has 3 miles to the next neighbor, or where we don't see each other. We do. And because of that, we have a tremendous societal awareness, tremendous need to deal with the perceptions of others. And the goal of Rosh Hashanah, and the goal that the Torah put forth when it looks at the one who heads the whole society, was to make sure that we don't just create a good, strong, functioning society, that everybody does what everybody expects and nobody gets in the way, but we have one that has God in it, that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is in it, that when we have expectations, those expectations are just to be able to somehow reflect Meir Shamayim, what Hashem wants. It's not a simple thing. It's not a simple thing at all. When we're going to get up to that on Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara says that we say, the Mishnah says, for the theme of Malchios, like for the other themes of the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah, we amplify the theme by quoting 10 verses from Tanakh that address the theme. That's what makes the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah long, but also extremely neat, right, and organized, because you have three themes, right, in the middle of the thing. Right, Malchus, the kingdom of Hashem, Zichronos Hashem, remembering and judging, and Shofar and the Shofar, and each theme is arranged. You start off by introducing it, and then you continue by citing 10 verses, and then you conclude with the closing. It takes a while to say all of that, but each theme is supposed to have 10 psukim. And the problem is that the Gemara has is that it's hard to find. It's supposed to be 4 verses from the Chumash, 3 verses from the Nevi'im, and 3 verses from Psuvim, which is always from Tehillim in this case, and that's the 10 verses. And you have to find 4 verses which refer to the kingdom of Hashem by name, Melech. And you don't have that in the Torah. The Gemara looks for it. And so the Gemara brings an opinion, which is the opinion which we hold, which we have in our machzor, which is that there's a verse which doesn't even say king, but it is the ultimate expression of Hashem as the king. And what's that? It's a verse we all know. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Shema. That's the 10th verse that we use in the Musaf. But right? Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu. When you declare Hashem Echad, Hashem is the one, then that means that Hashem is the king. The king is what rules, the king is what dominates, the king is why you do it, And there's no sharing of that. When we do it motivated by this and by that, it's not. Hashem Echad is an expression of exclusivity. We close our eyes when we say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Hashem is the one and only upon which every one of us is absolutely and completely dependent. And we have a hard time saying that because everything in life seems to tell us otherwise. So much seems to be dependent on other things. So our job, so to speak, like I said, saying clothing, both as people who have to accept the kingdom of Hashem, and as people who have to not interfere with the people around us accepting the kingdom of Hashem, is to try to focus in clearly on the Sefer HaTorah, on doing what we do, say, only because of Him, only because of the Ribbono Shel Olam, because of Hashem, not because of society, not because of expectations. And in our friendships, in our relationships with others, and we are there to encourage and to help other people do things, that they shouldn't do it because they will fail in our expectations, that they will somehow need to be, they won't be accepted sufficiently by us, but that somehow we will become transparent in the expectations which we impose, that it's just because this is right, because this is what Hashem wants. Hashem Echad. Hashem Echad. Hashem is the one and only. Amikabel Olav El Torah, Mahavir Mimenu Amalchus V'Derech Eretz. Expectations that they should be for anything else are erased when in fact we're able to really focus in on that which is the source of authority for everything that it is that we're supposed to be able to do. This is what I wanted to share with you tonight. We learn here this parsha. Santosim olam chamelech, appoint upon yourself a king. The Jews should, they need to. We have to have this order of society. But the king's job, like Adam Arishon put it, like the Torah teaches and the rules of the king, is really not so much to create a separate structure called the expectations of society, but as much as possible to help direct society towards the view of the divine expectations, towards Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. In the words of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, Yemayra Shamayim Aleinu, we should be blessed that we should have your Shamayim, we should have fear of heaven. It should be as real to us, as tangible to us, as the fear that we have of the expectations of others. And ideally, of course, much more so. It should be everything that motivates us. It should be everything that drives us. And we'd be successful in moving it forward. And Imru Fanai Malchios, indeed, making Hashem our king, helping others to accomplish the same thing.